Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to this edition of Global Leader Radio, the show with a particular focus on those individuals and organizations that do an exemplary job of identifying, attracting, developing, and retaining high potential talent. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, engage our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their aptitude, ability, and attitude. So we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways to include resources and advice that have led to personal and professional success for our guests. And with that overview, we welcome Karen Bass and Joe Sullivan of Automatic Data Processing, also known as ADP, to Global Leader Radio. So how are you?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Well, fantastic. Karen Bass has 23 years of sales and marketing experience, and she is currently an executive in training sales leader at ADP. She's also a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, which lends itself to a unique analytical skill set that combines marketing and data analysis. She's also worked for an impressive list of companies, which includes Xerox and Eastman Kodak Company and Pitney Bowes. So Karen is a member of the Atlanta Beltline Tax Allocation District Advisory Board. She's pretty competitive. I heard that she plays golf and tennis with her family, friends, and coworkers, but surprisingly not with me yet. I don't understand that, Karen.
We'll have to change that.
We'll have to fix that. Thank you. And so she has a bachelor's in business administration with an emphasis on marketing from Georgia State University, and her MBA degree is from the award-winning Executive MBA program at the Coles College of Business in Kennesaw, Georgia. So Joe Sullivan is a division vice president of sales for ADP. He's a talent management professional with 18 years of experience in human capital management. Joe is currently responsible for ADP's global talent sales organization and a unified suite of products included, but not limited to, recruiting, performance, compensation, succession, and learning technologies. So Joe's prior positions and leadership experience includes corporate training, general manager of operations for small and mid-sized acquisitions, and building ADP's first inside sales organization. Certainly no small feat, right?
Absolutely.
So these positions required 4 relocations across the United States. So Joe's a graduate of Fairfield University's Dolan School of Business and currently lives in Westwood, Massachusetts with his wife and 3 children. So first, I want to thank you both for joining us on today's show to discuss your business and the topic of global leadership. And so, Joe, let's begin with you. First of all, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. We're excited to have you on today. So tell us a little bit about ADP and then about your role, both the depth and the breadth.
Sure. Great. So we're real excited and proud of ADP's heritage. And as you know from some of your research, but for the listeners, we were established in 1949 as a payroll provider. And really, over the last 60-plus years in business, we've become the largest provider of HR services, not only in the U.S., North America, Europe, Latin America, but also in the Pacific Rim. And what that really means is that we help companies out with complex, costly HR administration challenges, employee compliance requirements, health benefit challenges, and also, as you know, managing talent as a whole.
Yeah.
We're happy and real proud of the fact that we have 30,000 HCM clients in the market today, and we're also the largest B2B cloud computing provider in the world.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, even more impressive is the fact that you actually came in from Massachusetts to be with us today.
That's right. So we come to Atlanta. Always love coming to Georgia, see Karen and the team, and we're happy to be here.
Well, good, because I've heard it said that behind every great boss is a great team.
That's right.
And so I'm sure you have a great team. So we want to have you brag on your team and call them by name as well as your boss.
Right. So my boss is Kevin Hendrick, who is the Senior Vice President of National Accounts. And my team makes up of Dave Weigler, and Jeff Walker, Chris Walker, Brian Coteau, and Andrea Caldarella, and they're located all over the U.S. and have global responsibilities as well.
Which makes you the perfect candidate for Global Leader Radio.
Absolutely.
So you certainly have global as well as domestic responsibilities. Do you differentiate between the two? Is there something that you do domestically that is somewhat different than what you do globally?
Sure. When you think about talent and you think about organizations, the lines of years ago of a U.S. decision or a process when we talk about HR processes are really gone. Mm-hmm. It's one line both globally and domestically. So it's all one process. So we don't really have many differences. There are certain intricacies of how we go to market in each individual market. But other than that, from a sales structure, a product structure, it's all the same.
Okay. So as you think through what's happening in the HCM, or human capital management marketplace, what are some of the trends you're seeing today?
Sure, we're it's interesting. It's ever changing. It's pretty fast paced, and it's a hot topic throughout the HCM space when you talk about talent specifically. You know, we think there's probably five trends that capture what's going on in the marketplace today. The first one, as I alluded to before, is really the alignment of HR practices, and within the HR, the roles that they play in organizations has changed dramatically. HR is breaking down those silos, and they're integrating themselves into the business, which is unprecedented. And certainly the organizations that can do that are ahead and have an advantage. The other trend we see a lot of, and when you think about global companies, you talk about compliance and control. So organizations are striving to drive compliance both internally and externally. There's a tremendous amount of pressure on HR, IT, in the legal groups to come up with sound risk avoidance around compliance and control.
Okay.
You know, as the last three, the middle one is certainly a huge one for organizations, and the tough one to figure out is, you know, organizations are realizing that unified platform, when they talk about human capital management, really increases ROI. And when you talk about integrated solutions, companies are seeking a single platform for core HR and talent solutions.
So does that include technology as well?
Sure, and that's really where the processes of HR, the philosophy of HR, and the company culture meet technology. It's really one topic. In organizations that don't have an integrated solution and they're not aligned with the business, it can cost probably 46 to 50% higher to operate their technology.
Wow.
So a unified system is something that's key to survival.
Yeah. Excellent.
The last couple, as we look at it today from what's going on, a trend, is obviously big data. So information and data equals better business decisions as a whole. And organizations aren't equipped to do that today. So people are leaning on data leaning on efforts to get more data and better data to make better decisions. This is a must-have, and you really don't have any room in today's environment to make bad decisions. Data is paramount. The last piece, as we all know, is the mobile workforce that we think is a huge trend. Obviously, the population communicates, they gather information, they share information a lot differently than they did before. Over the next couple of years, you're going to see that the workforce will be made up of people born after 1980.
Got it.
50% of the workforce.
Absolutely.
And so enabling this workforce mobily will be critical to business's survival and how people align to that.
Well, that's well put. I know we had Ryan Jenkins on, who's a millennial expert, and he talked about the fact that there will be actually four groups in the workplace, you know, beginning with the baby boomers and ending with the Gen X's or Gen Y's and millennials. All of those folks are in the workplace.
Absolutely.
And I know that has an effect on some of the five that you talked about, correct?
Right, absolutely. I think that the way the generation wants to have themselves judged from a performance perspective, how they want to, who they want to be judged by, it's not just their boss, they want to be judged by their peers. And I believe personally that people want to be judged not only inside the walls of what they do with the company, but outside the walls as well. You talk about volunteerism and a lot of different outside the walls efforts that people want to be brought into and judged upon from a performance perspective.
Yeah, well put. So when you look back on, across the five that you talked about, alignment of HR, et cetera, what are the, some of the causes of those trends? I know you, that you did touch on a few of those, but yep. I certainly wanted you to elaborate.
So a lot of causes. We did speak a little bit about it, but you know, the overall topic and the concern in the marketplace when you ask an HR person is employee engagement. Mm-hmm. So it's at an all-time low right now.
Wow.
You know, your average performing companies and organizations, you know, they have nearly 50% of their employees are actively disengaged. Hmm. You know, that's strikingly different from 10, 15 years ago. And there's a lot of different reasons for it, economy, structure, things of that nature, and just mm-hmm. the philosophies that have been passed down. You have a population, for the most part, 43% or so, that don't get adequate coaching. Hmm. So when you look about finding and keeping the right candidates, there's always going to be a challenge there. But you have to draw really strong connections to your employee base if you want to survive. And that's going to be key to the engagement and the productivity of these organizations. The other two ones, really, as you look at it, there's a ton of people available, as we all know today, in the marketplace.
Exactly.
The disconnect is they don't have the skill set that is needed, and it's demand from the organizations today. There's a real disconnect there.
So a lot of people, just not enough of the right people.
Tons of availability in the workforce, not enough available with the right skills.
Got it.
And the last thing, and this could probably go on and on, but I'd say the last really big thing is the change management and communication. So new technology, new user base. This has really shifted companies and how they communicate their strategies, how they connect with their employees, and how they really manage their HR processes. So this whole new concept of change management and communication has really driven a lot of these trends.
Well, that's interesting. And thank you for going through that in such detail. That's important for our listeners to hear. So what is ADP doing to address these trends in the marketplace as an overarching strategy?
Right.
And then, if you don't mind, take an extra second or so to really talk about what your team has done specifically to help drive ADP's strategy.
Sure. Good question. Two-part. I'll take the first piece. You know, ADP, if you're in the HCM market, you have to have a full suite that's integrated. So you have to have technology and processes that support the HCM suite holistically. It's not just payroll, time, not just performance. It's really collectively you have to have a full suite, and it has to be integrated and
okay.
unified.
Okay.
And that's what ADP is doing. The other piece of it is that you need to take this information and you need to put it into an analytics and that people can use it where they have real data. And when you look at what ADP does specifically in the marketplace, they develop analytics that are retrospective, predictive. They provide industry benchmarks for organizations and really help people obtain and get insight to their KPIs. The last piece that brings it all together from an ADP perspective in the marketplace and what we offer our clients is the full service model.
Okay.
Without that service model and an ability to assist organizations to execute, you really lose some of the benefit
and
of the technology.
And the continuity too, right?
Absolutely. You need that expertise and you need that service model and support to execute against these processes.
Which makes total sense. So, Karen, did I see you smiling over there and had a comment or two?
Yes, I'm in agreement with what Joe is saying. I spent a good bit of last year working on the HR BPO, which is that full service model. And he's absolutely right. With all the mergers and acquisitions, private equity, there's a huge need for outsourcing in the HCM space.
And BPO is business process outsourcing?
Correct.
Fantastic. Great. And so specifically, I know that from your bio, Joe, I learned that certainly you lead ADP's efforts to create, build, align, and develop a worldwide sales organization and strategy, certainly in the talent / human capital market, human capital management market. So, and I do know from your bio that this stuff has resulted in like a $10 million sales growth over a 15-month period,
right.
Which is just like crazy great growth, right?
Right.
So talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So I think that the market has realized that they are in need of a renaissance, so to speak, when it talks about HR processing. And you know, I'll take our own company for example, internally, and what we've done, and a lot of we've been able to capitalize with our product set, and go to market with a good story that we just talked about, and I think people are in tune to that. And you know, for example, when you look at an ADP, you know, it starts with our organization and our HR organization, and they're so tightly connected to the business, mm-hmm. and that's a huge advantage for organizations if their HR processes and organizations tied into the business. It's a huge win. You know, at ADP, we take our culture pretty seriously. We ensure that everyone has a unique role in our mission, visions, and values of an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in 125 different countries, and when you talk about a culture, you know, we hire our own employees within the each country, and it really adds to our culture and what we're trying to do. You know, we've established a diversity organization, a women in leadership program. We have an executive training program that enables us to hire diverse external talent like Karen into the organization. We've established resource groups sponsored by senior leaders, which is really important, that represent backgrounds and interests both all the way down to the local level. All this really, when you look at it and look at a talent management organization, having that continuity mm-hmm. in the marketplace really displays itself to the market, to our clients, and to how we develop products. So it really starts internally with ADP, and we think that's a difference maker.
So from the inside out, and then when you go to market, you go pretty strong, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a good
like
unified story. Absolutely.
I like that.
Yeah.
So as we pivot from Joe Sullivan, we're going to pivot toward Karen Bass. You probably heard her say a few things a few minutes ago, but we want to really highlight Karen. Karen, again, has really been a sales executive in training since last year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
And so, you mentioned the business process outsourcing around human resources, and you provided program management, business analytics, and business process management support for strategic initiative programs, and you've supported the HR BPO sales organization. And you supported that division with 114% planned performance. You know, that's pretty exciting stuff, right?
It is. I'd like to drop a name, and the division vice president is Paul Loftus. So it was a phenomenal year last year. A lot of good things came together.
Yeah, fantastic. So how are you? You doing well?
I'm doing great. It's been a wonderful opportunity to come to ADP and take a lot of my diverse background, a lot of the analytics and process, and work with ADP on some of the new approaches to going to market.
Well, actually, we're going to cover a couple of those. I've got a couple of questions I want to ask you about that. So specifically, what do you do at ADP today?
Well, right now, what I'm doing is taking a lot of the knowledge that I got last year working in the National Accounts Division, specifically supporting human resource business process outsourcing. I guess
okay.
I need to spell it out. And now working within the staffing or organization and on the back end, utilizing that knowledge, the sales knowledge, as to how we go about finding other avenues. Because like Joe mentioned, there are people out there, but you know, it's getting the right people on the bus.
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm working with a project team now that's looking at ways to attract primarily mid-career talent, people that have been working a while, have some domain expertise, experience to help us do a couple of things, fill those outsourcing contracts because we are growing in mm-hmm. that area, and also the organic growth that's happening at ADP as we become a more global footprint.
Okay. So you know, a question I've always wondered, did you choose ADP or did ADP choose you?
I love how you ask the question you already know the answer to. So here's the great talent story. I was prior at Xerox, and ADP recruited me via LinkedIn. So talk about a lot of different things going on here, social media recruiting and so on and so forth. But it was a great opportunity to kind of leverage – a great company I was working for at the time and move into some a new company and have some increased opportunity.
So Joe's given us a lot of great tips, and here you are giving us one right off the bat. Make sure that your LinkedIn profile is up to date.
Absolutely, yes.
Interesting. So, folks, hopefully you caught that one. So, Karen, I read in your bio that you're very active in the community. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing, and in particular, why you feel it's important to be involved in the community overall?
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm currently on the Tax Allocation District Advisory Council for the Atlanta Beltline. I actually live within the Atlanta Beltline and have grown up here in Atlanta and have been very involved in the community from going to school here, went to Georgia State, went to Kennesaw, and just volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
I am currently, as recently as, yesterday actually, agreed to do a speakers bureau also with the Atlanta Beltline, and I think it's a great way for me to stay connected to the community, to continue to get more contacts, quite frankly, and it's just, I really just enjoy it, and it's a very positive and constructive way to, people ask who you work for. I say I work for ADP.
It always comes up, right?
Yeah, so it's just something that I've always enjoyed doing.
Well, good, good. And again, you talked a little bit about some of the impressive companies that you worked for over your career and the fact that you've managed to make a difference in the roles you've played. So can you tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that Karen has learned about herself over your work-life journey that could potentially provide our learning community with a few great nuggets of advice?
Well, one of my philosophies is continuous improvement, and that manifests itself in a lot of ways. You know, constantly learning, going back to school, just continuing to make things better. And the world is not going to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe mentioned mobile as one of the trends. It will never slow down. It will be eternal whitewater. So I would say that personally I believe that being curious, wanting to learn, giving back is very important to being a good, whether it's sales leader or just business leader in general.
Well, interesting. So, Joe, when we're going to bring you back into this conversation, certainly. Mm-hmm. So when we think about talent management and human capital management, in your opinion, what does it take to really cultivate high potential leadership in an organization? And certainly knowing that Karen is what we would consider to be a high potential leader.
Sure. So I think leveraging technology, and obviously, you know, close to 15% to 20% of new hires in organizations today credit social media to why they came on board, mm-hmm. and you were part of that. I think it's the responsibility of the organization to brand themselves correctly within those social media sites into the recruiting community, so it's attractive to candidates, highly qualified, diverse backgrounds, mm-hmm. Can do a lot of different things into an organization. It also behooves the organization to make sure that they're open to different skill sets than what they've culturally had within their own organization.
Okay.
So Karen's skill sets coming from other big organizations, small organizations, having some experience outside of the walls of her professional career really adds to the culture of an ADP. And is really attractive to companies like ADP when hiring.
So when you think of a profile, that she's providing us with a great profile,
yeah,
right?
It's so beyond the resume, mm-hmm. What a profile and what people are looking for in candidates today. And I think what I would add to what Karen says, I think she's done a nice job with, is taking on different assignments. And she's got the background to do that, you know, education background. She's got the professional background that gives her the confidence to take on new assignments, mm-hmm. that aren't in her comfort zone. And it takes a special type of candidate to do that and really go forward.
Yeah, and you know, we're smiling here for probably very different reasons. I'm smiling as you make these comments because this is exactly what we tell people is the hallmarks of our program. And
absolutely.
She's probably smiling because here's Joe saying it about her, right, Karen?
Right.
So, Karen, tell us a little bit about your experience in the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. How that prepared you to get, you know, to the level of confidence that Joe talks about here?
Okay, so the MBA program was built around teaming, which is kind of unique. And we started out with an 8-member team, very diverse skills. We had someone who had a Oracle database background. We had a couple of salespeople like myself. We had a banker. And it took us a while to gel. We were all very, very different. But the thing that was unique is we learned to work together over 18 months. I had lunch yesterday with one of my team members, and I'll be playing golf tomorrow with another.
And your team name was?
I don't even remember.
Well, then let me put you back on
A-team.
The A-team. So tell us a little bit more about some of the things that are really important, from the program perspective that really set you up well to be able to perform when you got to, the ADPs of the world.
Well, the other aspect of this program is it did have a global slant. So we had the opportunity to partner with a Romanian school and actually do some project work with them. So you learn how to integrate and work with other cultures. There's other corporate cultures within the United States. Xerox is very different than an ADP. But it's very, very different than working with a lot of Western European, Eastern European companies. So it was very good in that regard. You got a really broad brush exposure from a global perspective. And then you also learned about teaming. I went to a breakfast not too long ago back at Kennesaw, as you know, Alvin, and got a refresher on corporate coaching and teaming. And when I left, well, actually during the program, I moved into a management role, and that was very, very, very helpful. In fact, my team was probably overcoached.
Well, interestingly enough, Joe mentioned earlier that adequate coaching and mission and vision and values are so important to being able to have a unified front with regard to building your team and how your team has been able to produce the fantastic results it has over the years. And I know that that's exactly what you do in the first semester over at in our executive MBA program. You know, you come away with a constitution that describes the vision, the mission, the operating guidelines, the behaviors, you know, up to and including what are going to be the disciplinary actions that will be taken. Because the team, again, is a self-directed group of individuals that have come together as a team. And teams are not divide and conquer. This is true teaming. And so when we think through that, that is the essence of what allows people to then take that back into their workplace on Monday after they've been in class on Saturday and Sunday. So instant ROI is very important, right, Joe? Yeah,
absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Very, very good. So as we talk a little bit more about what ADP has been able to do and mesh that with talent management and our whole conversation around cultivating leadership, can you talk a little bit about ADP's approach to integrating talent management processes into the day-to-day activities of employees and managers?
Yeah, so I think that when you look at integrating their process and you look at the market itself, the necessity around that, it really comes from, when you look at the market, only 7% of the market today is truly mature when I think about HR processes integrating into the business objectives.
7%, that's all?
7% are completely mature in that process. So the market, it's a constant battle to get up the maturity model that Burson really does a nice job of outlining for us.
Okay.
When you look at from the population within the organizations, 83% of the CEOs today identify talent management, to your point, as the number one most critical initiative they have on the docket for them to survive and to meet their business critical issues overall. So it's not surprising that with the 7% and then the 83% of the CEOs think it's number one, it's not surprising that most people within an organization feel like their objectives are not aligned to the business. And so what we do and what we try to do is we try to understand that, where they're not aligned, how can we put some best practices, some process recommendations, some standardization around their talent process and really help cultivate and get more alignment with their business objectives, because that's really where the ROI is and that's really where survival is going to be for a lot of these companies.
That's where the juice is as well, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So interesting you mentioned CEOs, and you've got a good one.
Absolutely.
In my research, what I found out is that in April of this year, ADP was named to the 2012 Diversity Inc. Top 50 Companies for Diversity list. Say that fast three times in
a row.
Yeah.
Right.
So that press release stated that ADP also ranks high for Latinos, executive women, and for recruitment and retention.
Yeah.
In that same month, your CEO, Carlos Rodriguez, was ranked third of the 25 highest-rated CEOs that are hiring now.
Right.
And now was capital N-O-W. So this appeared in Forbes magazine. He was ranked above Tim Cook at Apple, who was number four,
right,
if I'm not mistaken, and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, which was number five. So that's something to be said for being with the right company at the right time, right, folks?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We're extremely proud of it.
Absolutely. Well, and so fantastic. So tell me what it feels like, in your opinion, to really be with a team that is on the rise versus one. Because, I you know, as you know, I talk to lots of people. We've got over 1,500 alumni in from Kennesaw State University's Executive MBA program. And not all of them are in positions where they're very happy, and some of them are looking for ways to continue to move up the chain. And so when they're aligned with companies that aren't doing as well as your company and don't have quite the leadership that your company has, it's a different conversation.
Yep. We have a, you know, it's a simple, and Carlos's, you know, edict is simplify, innovate, and grow. And when you really look and break down those three items, that's really what ADP is all about. And we have a rich history of financial performance, but also a rich history of client satisfaction and employee satisfaction. And they're all connected, right? So, and I think the financial aspect, although I said it first, is really a result of the other two.
Okay.
You know, we've had a history of strong leaders, and Carlos is continuing that legacy and obviously being recognized in great ways for that. And when you think about the initiatives that grow from simplify, innovate, and grow, the organization really feels as though we're on the same page and aligned and in tune with our strategic objectives.
Yeah, you know, I spent a little bit of time thinking through this interview today and talking about what we do in our program and trying to align the two. And I was happy to have you on today, Karen, to make sure that we could highlight a few things. And
right,
certainly one of those things that Joe and I talked about in the green room earlier was around self-directed teams in our program and how the self-directed teams don't have a quote-unquote leader and how many people are really unfamiliar with that style and with that whole way of managing. And certainly you've had to go through that. So, and you realize it isn't always an easy thing. So can you talk a little bit about what you learned and immediately applied on the job with respect to self-directed teams and how, you know, your team came together around assignments?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Ultimately, it's about the win. You know, one of my favorite quotes is that, you know, stars win games, but, you know, champions win playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the collective win. There's a lot of research and studies that say women in general are more collaborative in nature, and I guess I fall into that category because I'm much more motivated, as we learned in the program, that we all win.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, a big part of our grade was on the collective team. It's not a program to go to if you want to do your own thing, if you're
right,
a lone wolf, so to speak. It's a model that supports teamwork. And I think that given the, I'll just take the HR BPO model, for example, it is very much a collaborative model. Obviously, there's a salesperson or persons there's generally more than one, that sells a deal. And then you have a lot of people that are involved in the integration process from implementation. And then even beyond that, you have people that are relationship managers, and you have people that do the change management and all those kinds of things. And it's really an example of how teamwork and collaboration comes together to support a single goal, which is keeping a satisfied customer. And to build on what Joe was talking about with Carlos and the direction, one of the things that ADP has done recently is to adopt Net Promoter, which is a universally known gauge of customer and client satisfaction. So,
is that a third-party tool or...?
It is. It's,
okay.
It literally monitors client satisfaction, but it follows that same principle of simplicity.
Okay.
So I think that I probably don't even think about it so much. People that work with me would probably say otherwise, but I tend to start with a business plan for everything I do. I mean, it's kind of scary, but... the other thing that I think is really important, especially with a company like ADP that has simple yet, dynamic offerings, is that you can't really care who gets the credit. You just have to really focus on getting it done. And so I think that's really helped me in some of the different projects that I've worked on. In fact, I think oftentimes it's better to try and highlight other aspects of the team.
Understood. Joe, your thoughts?
Yeah, so when you think about really what's important is from a results perspective, and I mentioned some of them before. When you think about the retention within organizations, you think about their satisfaction, the client satisfaction, and it really boils down to the client side is would they recommend someone to your company,
right,
to use your company services? And when it boils down to on the employee side is would you recommend one of your friends or family members to work for this organization?
Mm.
And when you think about those two questions in a real simplistic way,
mm-hmm.
and where you can rank high in those areas, you're doing really well.
Okay, that makes sense. So, Joe, I'd imagine that you've seen your share of perhaps all type of leaders, both effective as well as ineffective.
Right.
So what is Joe Sullivan's idea or concept of leadership?
Sure. I think today's leader needs to be and have a huge understanding of the marketplace, and it has to be client-focused and understand the ideas and wishes of and the strategies of the client and the market itself. Gone are the days of the person who sits in the corner office and answers the phone. You have to be out in the field.
Okay.
Today's leader, secondly, internally, they need to be connected with their organization. So they need to understand what their challenges and obstacles are. They need to understand the individuals, what makes them tick, what makes good performance. And they have to be able to deliver, and from a leadership perspective, tough feedback that with the idea of getting the organization and the individual stronger. And those three elements from a leadership perspective are really crucial.
So the industry knowledge market focus, which is the external knowledge, and the connected with the organization that you actually are charged with or responsible for or been entrusted with, which is the internal model, and then certainly being able to deliver the feedback and the results around that.
To get better, absolutely.
Fantastic. So your thoughts, Karen? What do you think in terms of your concept of leadership?
Again, it's collaborative, and
mm-hmm.
it's one where you are enabling others. And I think to Joe's point, part of enabling others is being able to provide feedback.
Okay.
And, that was a big part, obviously, of the program at Kennesaw. But I really think from a continuous improvement perspective that's how you get better. The teams and working on these kinds of solutions are dynamic.
Yeah.
And everybody does not share a brain, so you have to be able to deliver that kind of input. So, again, I don't know how to say it. I probably sound like a broken record, but collaboration is the key.
is a real key. Well, I'll also call out two of our other alumni that work at ADP, Craig Keyworth and Nicole Gray over in Alpharetta, some great folks. But really I want to focus in on one of the comments you made a second ago about they don't share a brain. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and kind of demystify some of that for perhaps some of our listeners? Of course, you and I know what that means, but we certainly want to make sure that the listeners can understand Dr. Brock's philosophy, perhaps.
Okay, so it simply means that you have to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, that be open to, you know, again, Joe mentioned that we're going to have four different groups in the workforce, and if you're managing a millennial and you're managing a baby boomer, you have to be aware of that. It's rare that those groups are going to have the same outlook on things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that just from planning the Thanksgiving dinner here. It's been quite interesting, but that's really what I mean.
Okay, well, good. And so we had a few folks on. Let's see, we had Karen actually last week. We had Holly Bass. And we had Mike Quinlan on as well at one point. Interesting, we've had two Basses a couple of weekends and a couple of weeks in a row, which is always a good thing. So one of the topics that came up was around this whole thought of emotion versus passion. So the way the question was phrased, and I'll phrase it to you, in your opinion, how important is it for a leader to display passion versus emotion? And so, as my daughters would probably say, the emotion is more like drama. And so I'm going to get both of your thoughts on that as we throw this football around here.
Right. So they're pointing to me. So I'll take a stab. I think that, you know, I want both.
Okay.
You know, I want both emotional leaders and emotional employees and passionate employees. And I think the distinction they probably made was one was more productive than the other.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at emotion, you know, the start of emotion and really where it comes from is the right intentions. Where emotion ends up is communicated incorrectly and actually has an adverse effect
yes.
on the process. And then versus passion has, again, probably born from the same spot of emotion.
Good point.
But has a really productive and constructive way of manifesting itself within a team environment and within an organization. And you know, I do agree there is a difference, and one can be less impactful than the other, for sure.
Good thought. So, Karen, what are you thinking?
Well, I think emotion is almost involuntary sometimes, and I think passion is something that you know, you work at, and that's something that you're very conscious of, and it can be overlooked in organizations. If people don't align people with their skills, and you might miss their passion. And you may be left with emotion, but I agree with Joe. I think they're both important.
Yeah, interesting. And so we'll switch gears a little bit. So Joe, I noticed that during your impressive career, you've relocated four times.
Correct.
And so in today's talent management environment, how important is a candidate's mobility to their ability to ascend vertically within the organization?
So, you know, I guess there's personal preference in there and personal philosophy, and then there's probably organizational philosophy. So I'll speak personally from that side of it. And I think that I think relocation is crucial to gain a different perspective.
Okay.
So it's not only the physical move mm-hmm. of wherever you might go, but there's also the professional development side, that you mature within a job that that you take yourself out of the comfort zone in and start to execute against. The maturity really it grows exponentially versus you staying in a current position, right? So there's a lot of challenges there that you're able to take and really strengthen your profile and strengthen your professionalism and what you offer to an organization. personally, I think as we look at today's environment, the rise of technology, the global teams, you know, there's very rare that anyone has a U.S.-based team today.
Correct.
So the global leadership has a wide span of responsibilities and locations that they manage and people and cultures that they manage. Mm-hmm. So having someone move just to have a global team, sometimes it could be outdated. But okay. I think strategically it's more well-placed today than it was years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more thoughtful than it was years ago. I think it was a must-have. Whereas today, I think it's more about taking on additional responsibility, challenging responsibilities, and it's less about where you sit physically.
Understood. So it's really more about the actual work itself and what you gain out of it. So did that help to drive your decision about taking these different roles and relocating? Because I'm assuming that when you relocated, you took a different role.
Absolutely.
It could be a wrong assumption.
No, absolutely, but, yeah.
Okay.
So that was part of it, absolutely. Okay. It was a big part of adding to your internal resume.
There you go.
And really broadening your scope so you're more attractive for bigger jobs in the future. And if you relocate, I think there's speed to that. So I think my career personally was accelerated because I was able to relocate and do different things on a number of different occasions. And I think that propelled you quicker in an organization. Certainly a benefit of it.
Absolutely. So we know that there's no certain profile about how a person can ascend in an organization. You know, they can do it by doing it internally. And certainly one way that you've done it is certainly a path that I've seen others take. Another path I've seen is kind of the one that Karen, you've done, where you've actually moved between companies. And so, you know, sometimes out of necessity, sometimes not, but certainly you ended up with a very different aspect, a very different view when you go between organizations. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, what that looks like and how that felt? Because I know there was an element of risk there. You know, you're taking a great leap, and to what Joe said earlier, you know, you got to have some confidence in there too. You know, you got to feel pretty bulletproof at some points to be able to make that move, right?
Well, okay, so I'll tell you how it worked for me. I was fortunate to be able to take different roles in many cases within the same company.
Ah.
You know, different divisions. And that's very important, I think, to leadership development. If you worked in, and ADP is a lot like some of the companies that I've worked for in the past, you might have a smaller division that focuses on smaller size business. You have a national division, you have a global division, things like that. You might have a channel division. So I've had the opportunity to do that. And the times when I've actually, early in my career, left companies, now I'll get real personal. The first time I got married, and we weren't both allowed to work for Pitney Bowes at the same time. So I had to leave. And then the second time, when I was at Kodak, they actually sold the division I was in to Danka, and I was recruited to come over and work at Xerox. So it was a good thing for me. And again, I was recruited over to ADP. So I feel very fortunate to have been able to move in that manner.
Oh, very good. So when you both think through leadership and leadership skills and being able to work with a person and cultivate and help to coach them, Joe, what do you think is the most teachable leadership skill?
Good question. I think that urging people to be themselves is the reason why there are reasons why people are put you in a position of leadership. And I feel like I've seen failure, and even myself, when you go away from the core of who you are. And try to be someone else from a leadership side, that's when you fail. And that's when there's a lot of disruption within the team. Mm-hmm. But if you stay true to who you are and you're able to coach people to stay true to who they are and the reasons why you were hired and brought on board for this specific job still exist today, it can really be beneficial to the organization and to the individual. And I think that's the most coachable, and it resonates the most with those individuals.
Great answer. As a matter of fact, I'm holding in my hand an article from Josh Kaufman from this year's edition, one of this year's editions of Nightingale Conant. I get a monthly news magazine, and this particular one says, "Do you have the necessary core human skills to succeed?" And so it lists 12 primary areas or core human skills you should focus on developing as a leader. And based on what you just said, you nailed number 10, which is self-awareness.
Right.
And so what happens, I find a lot, and because I interview quite a few candidates for our program, is that the difference between those who qualify for what we call high potential leadership and those who don't is that difference. They are not aware of what they bring to the table. Hence, they can't continue to produce the results they need to produce.
Right.
They just don't understand, okay, so why did you bring me here? I mean, it's as simple as asking the question, right? I mean,
right.
You can certainly ask the person you report to what they see in you and get the feedback, and people are either not interested in asking or don't know they can ask or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about why people just don't do it, now, what you've seen there?
So I think it's a tough conversation to have, and I think that when you look at organizations today and you talk about your high potential employees, you know, only 60% of the organizations today actually track their high potential employees, and it really comes down to being able to coach them, mm-hmm. Being able to have and teaching them how to have tough conversations, and it is a little, you know, self-awareness, that specific topic is a little bit intangible when you think about business objectives, mm-hmm. and your performance reviews and your traditional ones, the way you think of it today. So that shift is difficult to make for a lot of leaders.
Got it. So, but I'm intrigued. 60%? Only 60% actually track their high potential.
Have a strong handle on their high potential employees.
Interesting. So that sounds like an opportunity for somebody out there.
Absolutely.
So Karen, what do you think is the most teachable leadership skill, something that you can help to coach others with?
I don't know how teachable this is, but I think if you can model humility, that's very important, especially when you're coming into situations where oftentimes the people that you're leading or working with know more than you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can recall having leaders or managers that clearly didn't know more than the people they were leading, but acted like they did.
Okay.
They didn't have any humility.
And people can see right through that.
Yeah, and I have had the pleasure of working with a lot of leaders who have done that and modeled that, and I think that's very important.
Absolutely. So what advice do you provide when someone asks your opinion on how to refine his or her leadership skills? Do you typically take an approach to understand a little bit more about who they are and then talk about some of the things that you think they can do to improve? Or how do you typically approach that request for advice?
Well, I'm kind of analytical, so I'm going to want to know. I'm going to want more data.
Take us through your process.
I'm going to want to understand what's normal for them? What's their average performance? What's their average state?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of go from there to determine if there is indeed a gap, mm-hmm. from where, you know, I think this kind of gets back to awareness a little bit with where they actually are and where they may think they are and where they really probably need to be.
Okay.
And that's not an easy process.
And that requires some conversation.
It does. Conversation, observation, you know, to put it in context of a sales leader, it might require, you know, field travel, and observing how people interact with clients and things of that nature. So it just, I guess it's kind of situational as well.
Which is number two of the top three that Joe talked about earlier, you know, the making sure you're connected with the organization, right? So, Joe, we'll pose that question to you. What advice do you typically provide when someone asks your opinion on how to refine his or her leadership skills?
So there has to be a contract of expectations of trust,
mm-hmm.
and honesty. So those two things, when you think about organization having those conversations and improving upon what the current state is. If you don't trust each other, that's kind of the ante to play. And then you have to have an understanding that I'm going to be brutally honest with you,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be honest with me. And if in an environment other than the expectations of trust and honesty, if they don't exist, it's tough to move forward and it's tough to be productive.
Yeah, understood. So, and it also sounds like this individual would have been at least aware enough to know that they're missing something, that there's a gap someplace. So they've got a little bit of self-awareness, and that's important. That's what I'm hearing. So what are you both doing to ensure that you continue to grow as leaders?
Okay, you're looking at me. I think we've been talking about self-awareness, and I think that's very important. And I think I personally, in seeking out career coaching, and think it's been very helpful and very valuable. I think any profession, you always have to have coaching and instruction. Go back to golf.
Mm-hmm.
Professional golfers have coaches. So if you look at it that way, you're always trying to make yourself better. So that's what I'm doing. I'm at a point in my career where, I've got to determine, what do I do next? So I think I've had the benefit of a lot of great opportunities within ADP, a lot of investments in training.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm doing.
Okay. So did I hear you right? You said to make sure that you're better as a leader, you play more golf. Is that what I heard?
Now you're just twisting things.
Having fun. Having fun. Joe?
So I would say mentorship. So for your listeners and the people in the program, they need to have mentors at high levels, at peer levels, at people underneath them from an organizational perspective. It has to be informal and formal. And I think that the most powerful aspect, if you can embrace having mentors within your reach that you trust, that's valuable, and that can really make an impact. And that's certainly what holds true for myself. I take that very seriously. And a lot of it's informal.
Okay.
And that's what I do, and I would recommend for a lot of people.
So you use the word mentoring, and I know we talked a little bit about coaching earlier. Do you draw a distinction between the two, or you see them as the same?
There's a distinction in the sense that, coaching transcends all types of obviously there's an element of coaching that exists within mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching
is not industry specific, perhaps.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so, Karen, I know that you've got an extensive, quote-unquote, training on the differences between those two. Do you see it as mutually exclusive, or what are your thoughts?
I guess technically coaching is more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches don't it's not a directional type interaction. It's helping the individual come to some conclusions on their own. Whereas mentoring is more, let me show you how to do this.
Okay.
Ideally.
Got it. Okay, so Joe, how important is it for employees, colleagues, and leadership to be lifelong learners?
So it's essential to survive today. And as you know, the population, we have an aging baby boomer population that's exiting the workforce. I think many of them have taken that mantra that they need to be lifelong learners. It's not a start and end date when you talk about learning. It's not a project that ends.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that needs to be continuous. And it has to be front brain, quite honestly, every moment.
Okay, so what have you picked up about the lifelong learning piece of it? I know you employ quite a bit of that. We've had several conversations. So what is your thought that you would give advice-wise to the people that are listening on our program today?
I think if you to keep evolving, you have to keep learning. And some of it just happens anyway.
Organically.
Having more of a structure to my learning. So as you know, I take Spanish lessons. I volunteer, help the community. It's just ever ending, So I think it's a personal choice. But one thing I will say is that when you go back to school, and a lot of people will agree to this, is that you realize you have so much capacity to continue to learn, that when you finally do graduate, you think, oh, I'm done, but you're never done.
Yeah, the fire still burns, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we've been spending a little time chatting with Karen Bass, the executive and training sales leader at ADP, and Joe Sullivan, Division Vice President of Sales for ADP. And we've been having a great conversation around global leadership and talent management. And, of course, the great news at ADP, that ADP is open for business and doing quite well.
Absolutely.
Globally and domestically. So with that in mind, I'm going to move to my final question for each of you. So we're going to make your answer to this question available on our web posting. And for the first time, you're going to be the first guest that we will have do this. I'm actually going to take a video of your response, and we're going to put that on the web, too, so people will be able to click in on that. So thankfully, unlike me, you definitely have a face for television. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability, Joe?
So I think that it's a great question, and it's a book I read a few years ago, and it's Shackleton's Way, and Margot Morrell, I think, was the author. And with the impact of that, it's an amazing story, not only of the human spirit, but really of leadership. And it has the opportunity to go really bad really fast. And when you're stuck for 26 months in Antarctica with 26 crew members, and you don't lose one member, and you talk about leadership and everything that's involved in having a survival on something like that situation is truly amazing, and it's a must read for leadership. Absolutely.
Great, thank you. And so I'm going to ask the same question to you, Karen. Which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
I'd have to say Good to Great by Jim Collins. It was a book that we were asked to read at a very turbulent point in Xerox's career back in 2000, 2001. We were really worried at that point whether or not we were going to get sold, acquired. And, you know, I've reread it. I've had a lot of personal changes since I first read it, but it really fulfills the continuous improvement. It helps you understand, well, how come these companies made it and these didn't, and what was the leadership style? And you hear a lot of people quote that book, you know, and I did it earlier too, putting the right people on the bus. But I think it's kind of a universal theme that it's one of those good go back and read.
Good. So great. We appreciate you for taking your time and efforts and also imparting your passion on us and your wisdom. And on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from you, certainly both of you, and we appreciate you for taking, again, time out of your busy schedules to join us today. And I'd love to have you back on the show whenever we can arrange a special flight for you to come in from Massachusetts,
sure,
perhaps.
Absolutely.
So is that a deal, Karen? Can we get you back here at some point, too?
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. So with that in mind, could each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you, either by email or phone or both?
Sure. So it's email is joe.sullivan@adp.com, and Twitter account is joesullivanadp, and you can look me up in LinkedIn as well in any way at all to contact me, whatever's more comfortable to you, more than happy to take your call.
Great.
And my email is karen.bass@adp.com, and it's at karen65 for Twitter.
That's the Twitter. So say it again. I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt you.
At Karen65.
So with that response, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. We invite you to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. Also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. I'd enjoy hearing your thoughts, and certainly we've been able to get a few of your guests' recommendations on the show. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.